wasn't going to be using it to quickly jump across the city or anything like that. Still, any form of teleportation device was immensely useful, and I planned to make more of them just as soon as I had time. I attended the closing ceremony for the school. I got my final grades for the year. Cadence, Corin, Enchanter. First year. Overall class ranking, 1,544 of 8,112. Phoenix Division rank, 238 of 1,564. Current point total, 760. Class scores. Magic Theory, 55, rank C. Understanding Attunements, 65, rank B. Mana Manipulation, 110, rank S. Physical Combat, 61, rank B. Introductory Runes, 75, rank B+. Elective, Art of Artifice, 30, rank D. Elective, Dueling, 70, rank B. General Tests, 118. Final Examination, 176, rank C. Overall Grade, rank B. I'd apparently gotten a C score for my final, which was lower than the rest of my friends. They'd ended the test with a B- score. Presumably my lower ranking was because I'd been pulled out early by Alora's intervention. That was a little frustrating, especially since I'd been almost finished with the exam when Alora arrived. Still, I was grateful to at least have a passing grade. And I'd have an above-average overall score going into the second year, too. That was a major relief. And then with all that finished, it was time for the last thing before the school closed for the year. The winter ball. After everything I'd been through, it sounded so mundane. I'd gone on a quest for a visage, earned a second attunement, and fought a child of the tyrant himself. Why was I still so nervous about a ball? It couldn't be that bad. Could it? Chapter 20. Ballroom Dancing. Store Selyse Leanne. Store Broken Transference Sword. Store Etching Rod. Store Additional Food Supplies. Store Additional Water. Store 50 Feet of Rope. Store 10-Foot Pole. Store Flint and Steel. Store Tent. Store Pillow. Store Universal Mana Crystal. Store Cloak of Temperature Shielding. Store Ring of Derek Controlling. I still didn't have an official name for the ring, but did still find that one hilarious. I probably would have just worn the ring if I'd figured out how to make it safe, but I hadn't determined how to remove the anti-tampering runes yet. If I could do that, I could make it respond to my own voice alone, much like Orden had. That would make it an extremely useful tool. Maybe not a moral tool, but I'd worry about that later. Sarah watched me with an amused expression.
Are you sure you've got everything you need for the ball? You might want to put two or three more swords in there just in case.
I nodded seriously. You're right. Go get Saris. I'll ask Patrick to get the Dawnbringer replica. She folded her arms.
You're joking. This is a party, Corin. And while I know those are more terrifying to you than the average monster, I don't think an arsenal is going to solve that.
You might be surprised how much a few artifact-level weapons can solve. Sarah sighed.
Fine. I'll get Saris, but only to make you feel better. I still think this is ludicrous. There are going to be hundreds of attuned there. Probably thousands. Even Saffron would think twice about attacking a group of that size.
I sucked in a breath, my hand trembling slightly when I heard his name. You didn't see him, Sarah. I respect that you don't think anything is going to happen, but just let me have this.
Fine. Fine. But after that, you have to let me dress you up. You're not going to a ball wearing that.
I was wearing utilitarian boots, thick trousers, and a simple black doublet. It was a very similar outfit to what I'd first worn in the spire. I felt vaguely offended.
I'm dressed practically.
You're practically undressed. She rolled her eyes.
Please tell me you have at least some formal wear.
Formal wear? I replied in a teasing tone.
You're impossible. Fine. I'm going to get my sword, and then I'm taking you shopping. We can bring Marissa. She's almost as hopeless as you are.
That gave me an idea. Well, if we're going shopping, and I'm going with Marissa and Patrick, maybe we should all match?
Sarah folded her arms. Clearly, having a theme would help, yes.
I smirked. I have an idea. A few hours later, I had successfully traded a newly made mana watch to a Laura Theus in exchange for 4 professionally tailored dueling tunics. The mana watch wasn't worth nearly as much as the tunics, but Alora had seen her sibling with one, and that meant she needed one. It was a sign of Alora's immense wealth that she barely seemed to think about making such a disproportionate trade. I'd remembered that the dress she'd worn was made from the same material as a dueling tunic, and I'd guessed, correctly, that it meant she knew a tailor that worked with the materials. The truth was even more impressive. House Theus owned one of the largest suppliers of ironweave and steelweave silk in the city, as well as a number of tailoring shops. It had been a simple thing for Alora to clear a few hours in the schedule of a tailor and have tunics adjusted to fit each of us. If we had a little longer, she claimed she would have had the tailor make them for us from scratch, but we didn't have the time. Once the tunics were adjusted, she had them dyed the blue and white colors of House Cadence. She also provided us with matching trousers made of the same silk. Those were free, simply because Alora wouldn't imagine providing us with anything less than full matching suits. Even Sarah, who had been previously quite excited by a freshly purchased dress, was happy to cast it aside for the matching outfits. I didn't care much for how they looked. I just felt better in the comforting weight of a dueling tunic, and the knowledge that it could stop at least a few blasts from a dueling cane. It was nearing evening when we finished, which was important, because it was the night of the ball, and all of us, including Alora, were going. We arrived at the ball a few hours later, traveling at first by train and then taking the rest of the journey in a carriage that Alora provided. The ball was being held at the estate of Archduchess Lannoy, the current ruler of one of Velia's 4 archduchies. I'd met a few members of her family, but I hadn't met her personally. Her son, Counselor Gerald Lannoy, was one of the council members that I'd seen fighting against Karras in the memory crystal that Jin had brought me earlier in the year. I wondered if he'd be in attendance. Counselor Lannoy had called himself Tenjin's adjutant in the vision, which implied that he worked for Tenjin personally. If it wasn't a ceremonial title, I suspected he might have answers to some of my questions. Our carriage moved into a line of dozens, maybe hundreds, of other arriving carriages. The winter ball was a celebration for all the students who had managed to finish the year. Most of the school's students would be there, as well as many teachers and important political figures. Thousands of people in total. In a group of that size, some of those people undoubtedly worked for groups that had reasons to hurt me. More followers of the tyrant, or people who had worked with Orden, for example. I would have felt better if Derek or Karras was going, but they were both staying behind. Karras had a good reason. His last encounter with Counselor Lannoy had been when the man had lured him into a meeting to have him arrested. I could see why he wasn't exactly thrilled at the idea of going to Lannoy's home. Derek was a little vaguer, simply claiming that he had somewhere else to be. Moreover, he was still healing from his injuries from his fight with Saffron. Apparently I wasn't the only one who had walked out of that with a few broken bones. We passed dozens of outlying buildings, each flying banners of House Lannoy. Up ahead, our destination could not be described as a simple mansion like Derek's house had been. Palace would have been a better term. We approached through a garden lined with crimson flowers and bronze statues depicting heroes of ages long gone. When we finally made our way through the gardens, we found our way up a marble stairway wide enough for hundreds. Ahead of that, we could see the main entrance. Titanic doors that appeared to be wrought from solid gold were flanked by tall white pillars that held aloft the rest of the structure. It was a monument to opulence that made me supremely uncomfortable. A single cylindrical tower loomed above the rest of the structure, with an artistic rendition of a serpent wrapped around it and resting its head at the top. That, at least, I could appreciate. Marissa, Patrick, and I approached the line to the entrance. I felt awkward, constrained in the press of hundreds of bodies. Sarah had chosen to go separately, along with her date, and promised to meet us inside. I still didn't know who she was going with. She clearly was hoping to make it a surprise. I hoped it'd be a good one. As we stood in the line, Marissa and Patrick made idle conversation with each other and a few other students. I made a few replies when prompted. I was too distracted to say much, since I was spending most of my attention looking for Jin. I didn't find him. We made our way inside. Guards in golden mail, holding ceremonial glaives, checked us for weapons. We'd anticipated that, and I'd stored all of our weapons in the Jaden box. I had that in the pouch on my side. Fortunately, they didn't ask to take the box, otherwise I would have been in a difficult situation. After determining that we were unarmed, the guards pointed us toward the main ballroom. Because, obviously, a place of this size had several ballrooms. Apparently the first-year students were being sent to the main ballroom because there were more of us. I presumed there would be separate events and ceremonies in each room, and that the most important guests were going to be moving back and forth between the ballrooms for speeches. There were no assigned seats for the students, only for important guests. The interior of the ballroom was just as gaudy as the exterior of the building. It was divided into four quarters, each with a different color of tiles on the floor. White for student seating, black for adult guests, blue for dancing, and green for refreshments. In the center of everything was a smaller square which contained a raised stage. At the moment, it contained a group of musicians who were playing a classical tune. I could also see a podium on it, where I assumed speeches would take place later in the evening. I wasn't looking forward to those. They always ended up being terribly boring. The ceiling was made of glass or some sort of transparent crystal, allowing the light of the stars to shine down from above. The walls were lined with portraits of people who were probably famous, but who I didn't know or care the slightest bit about. Now that we were inside, theoretically, we had gotten to the part of the party that was supposed to be fun. I just wasn't sure how I was supposed to make that part happen. Marissa, Patrick, and I found an open table. The other two sat down to wait for Sarah to arrive, but I was feeling too jittery to sit. I glanced around at my options. Dancing was terrifying. Politicians? Who wanted to talk to them? Certainly not me. Other students? Nah. The last section was food. Eating it is, I decided. Eating forever. I'm going to go get food, I declared as I left the others, bravely delving into the massive crowd. This was a mistake. There are people here. I should have just sat down. As I attempted to navigate through the press of bodies, I searched the area for any familiar faces that I needed to avoid. In the area with the important guests, I could see several people of interest. Alora was sitting at the lead table, this time wearing a dress that looked like it had been wrought entirely from silver. I knew better. It was just another type of dyed metallic weave and likely offered similar protection to her previous dress. Still, it looked impressive. She was laughing with a gentleman who looked to be about her age that I didn't recognize. He had a strong resemblance to Derek, aside from his hair, which was short and white. A sibling, maybe? Ugh. Derek and Alora's relationship was the worst kind of complicated. I didn't see Sheridan, although I knew they were supposed to be at the party somewhere. Presumably, they had gone to the other ballroom, either to avoid Alora or simply to talk to other people they knew. Counselor Lanoy was sitting a few seats down from Alora, next to an older woman that I presumed was his mother, the host of the party. They were both chatting with Chancellor Wallace, who was standing on the other side of the table. I recognized a few other people, including a couple teachers and some other wealthy nobles my parents had introduced me to years and years ago. I assumed many of my professors would be in attendance, but fortunately, I didn't see any of them right away. I finally made it through the general crowd and into the food line. What am I even doing here? This is absurd. There's no reason for me to be at a party like this. I saw Jin just a few moments after that, leaning up against one of the walls with a cocktail in hand.
Oh.
That's why. He winked at me. I very deliberately looked away. I continued waiting in line, observing everywhere Jin wasn't as a way to fill my time. As expected, there were hundreds of students already here and more pouring in all the time. Occasionally, I'd hear some commotion as some high-profile guest entered the room. Occasionally, mild applause, usually for someone on the Council of Lords or someone in a fancy military uniform. The most interesting thing for me turned out to be the runes on the walls. Like Alora and Derek's household, this place was heavily enchanted. It made sense to have a degree of security for any locale that was going to house this many people, but they'd been thorough. I saw dozens of copies of runes I recognized, shielding, anti-teleporting, anti-scrying, that sort of thing. The specific shapes were similar to what I recognized, but not identical. Given the architecture of the room, I suspected that was because they were old-fashioned rune designs. Long lines of the protective glyphs trailed from floor to ceiling, spaced out roughly every 20 feet. I assumed that indicated that the runes had a limited area of effect. Either that, or they were just reinforcing them with redundancy. It was impressive either way. I wasn't the only one inspecting them either. I saw a few others near the walls admiring the intricacy of the runic patterns. One person in particular caught my eyes. A young woman with purple hair that trailed all the way down to her hips. There were plenty of people with dyed hair, with unusual colors at the party, so that wouldn't have necessarily caught my attention on its own. I noticed a couple things that made her more eye-catching. The first thing I noticed was that she was walking right up to the runes and tracing figures in the air next to them. A mnemonic device for remembering the shapes, maybe? Nobody was stopping her, and the runes weren't going out, so I didn't see any cause for alarm. Still, it was unusual enough that I registered the need to keep an eye on her. The second thing I realized was that I'd seen her somewhere before. But where? Somewhere at the academy, maybe? I couldn't quite remember. Before looking away, I tried turning on my attunement to see how powerful she was, but the blur of hundreds of auras made it almost impossible to see anything at a distance. I thought her aura was probably just clear, though. Notably, she wasn't the only person with a clear aura or no aura at all. In fact, most of the people in the guest section, as well as most of the serving staff, didn't have auras. I hadn't seen so many non-attuned civilians in one place in ages. I'd started to think of being attuned as the default, when in reality, most people never earned one. After a few more minutes of awkwardness, I made it to the food. I heaped far more than I was likely to actually eat on my plate. Realizing that the drinks were in bottles, I tucked a few under a shoulder to be considerate to my friends. Then I awkwardly waddled through the crowd, spending most of the time desperately trying to keep the bottles from slipping and breaking on the floor. I made it back to our table just in time for Sarah's grand entrance to the ball. There was a hush near the entrance as she walked into the room. No, not because of her. In spite of being far more politically savvy than I was, Sarah wasn't well known. Not yet, at least. It was her date that drew stares and murmurs. He was hard not to notice, given his wingspan was nearly twice his height. I sighed, putting down the plate and bottles so I could hold my face in my hands. Of course Sarah had brought Veniv to the ball. He was tall, charming, and looked like a fashion model. His abs looked like they were literally chiseled. I wasn't sure how she'd managed to find him a suit in House Cadence's colors, with slits for his wings. Maybe that was why she'd insisted on coming separately? The crowd had to part around them, simply because Vaniv's wings were so wide that he couldn't enter the room otherwise. They made their way over to our table.
Corin! Dear brother!
Sarah opened her arms. I rolled my eyes at her as theatrically as possible, then obliged in giving her a hug. Hello, dear sister. Nearby, Veniv grinned and opened his arms as well, not toward anyone in particular. Patrick, always a good sport, rose from his chair and gave Vaniv a hug. Vaniv seemed briefly startled, then grinned and pulled Patrick in closer, like they'd been long-lost brothers. I felt a pang of envy as that thought ran through my mind, and I remembered what the spire had taken away from me.
Patrick! Ah, I see you have the lovely Marissa with you as well.
Vaniv turned his head downward and offered Marissa an exaggerated wink. Marissa folded her arms.
So you're Sarah's mystery date?
Sarah finally let me go and stepped back.
He most certainly is. I considered all sorts of students, but I thought I'd go with a real man.
And there is no realer man than I,
Vaniv replied with a nod.
Excepting for the fact that I am a magically created copy of the original Vaniv, of course, and thus completely fake.
Sarah patted him on the arm.
There, there. You're real enough for me, dear.
I know.
Ah!
Vaniv snatched one of my bottles off the table.
Drinks! This is what I'm here for.
Sarah sat down and leaned back in her chair.
You're here to be my date.
Yes, yes. And drinking. Drinking many things.
Vaniv smiled. He didn't seem to know how to get the stopper out of the bottle, which was understandable. I didn't either. So he simply snapped the stem at the top and began to drink. The luxuries of having stone skin, I supposed. Never have to worry about mild lacerations.
This is quite good. I believe I'm getting drunk.
I didn't have the heart to tell him that it was apple juice. Apparently neither did anyone else. I leaned over toward Sarah.
So, Vaniv, isn't he technically only, like, 10 weeks old?
This copy of him might be, sure, but he has the memories of his original self, who is 20, thank you very much.
I chuckled. And the fact that he's compelled to obey your every whim doesn't strike you as unethical?
Please, Corin. I'm showing him off at a fancy party. Vaniv and I are both too classy.
Vaniv broke off the top of a second bottle, but a little too hard this time, spilling half the contents on the table.
Correction.
Sarah sighed.
I am far too classy to do anything untoward with my control of a summoned monster.
I laughed. Fair. I turned away, focusing on eating my food. I didn't mention the fact that I was pretty sure that Sarah had told us she had a date for the ball before she'd made her contract with Vaniv. If she wanted to play this off like it was her plan all along, I wasn't going to get in her way. She deserved a chance to smile and laugh. And as weird as it might have seemed, Vaniv did too. Sarah wasn't going to let me get away with teasing her without a bit of retribution, though.
So, Corin, you're looking quite charming in that new outfit. I can tell that at least one person is particularly taken with it.
Oh, no. I coughed. Please don't tell me.
He's staring right at you. Quite brazenly, in fact.
My, my. I sighed, turning to find that Jin had relocated to lean against a different wall, but that he was still watching me. He noticed that I'd noticed him and tilted his hat downward.
He's not going to stop doing that, is he?
I set my fork down. I'll be right back. Good luck!
Don't get your heart broken!
I shook my head as I left the table, heading toward Jin.
Corin,
he said amiably as I approached.
What a surprise to find you here.
I folded my arms. You could stare at me a little less, you know. Jin smirked.
Why? There's nothing else that interests me here.
Do not be charmed. He is not charming. There is no charming happening here. None. While I appreciate your interest, there are plenty of fascinating people here. And a band. Playing music. You could watch the band.
Watching the band isn't what people come to a ball for, Corin.
He pointed a hand toward another section of the room. The dancing section. I watched the distant figures swaying together in harmony, holding each other close. It was a romantic ideal, the kind of thing that we'd read about as children, seen in plays and operas. How could I justify doing that with someone who I didn't trust? My jaw tightened. I haven't forgiven you. I can't forgive you. Jin looked away.
I know. I don't expect you to. But that conflict we had, Does that really cancel out the things we've shared?
No, I shook my head. But it does make it difficult for me to want to have anything to do with you. Jin winced.
It would appear I've made a mistake in coming here.
He nodded, more to himself than to me.
Have a good night, Corrin.
He turned to leave. I spoke without thinking.
Wait!
Jin turned toward me, raising an eyebrow. One song. Jin tilted his head. I'll dance with you for one song. That's it. No more. Jin exhaled heavily.
I understand.
He spoke again, more quietly.
I'll be glad to have a chance to dance with you at all.
He led the way toward the dance area. He took my hands. We swayed together, awkwardly, at first. Don't forget what he did. This doesn't mean anything. The song ended. We continued to sway, even in the silence. Minutes passed, perhaps hours. Finally, I broke away.
Thank you, Corrin.
Jin bowed at the waist.
You have made my evening worthwhile.
I bowed in return. Good night, Jin.
Good night, Corrin.
Jin disappeared into the crowd. I breathed a sigh of relief, slipping back to the table. Sarah waggled her eyebrows at me suggestively. I just glared at her. I couldn't even articulate my thoughts. I certainly couldn't come up with anything clever to say. I settled for eating my now cold food. It was still pretty good. I found myself finally starting to relax a little bit, now that Jin was gone, and I had something to focus on aside from my insecurities. Unfortunately, my insecurities were creeping up right behind me.
Corrin?
I froze at the sound of that voice, my fork still in hand. Gently, I set the tool down and turned to face the horror behind me. The young woman was just my age, with her auburn hair cut just above the shoulders. She wore large, round glasses with tiny runes etched into the frames. Her dress was white with silver accents. Her family colors that I'd seen 100 times. It was accented by a large silver brooch, etched with runes that were easier to read if I had the ability to pay any attention. The frilly white umbrella she carried was very traditionally ladylike. It didn't suit her in the slightest. My voice caught in my throat. It wasn't because I was choking, fortunately.
Hello? I don't know if you remember me, but,
Cecily, I managed somehow. She let out a heavy breath, although I couldn't tell if it was out of relief or mortification.
You remembered me. That's, good, I suppose. I just wanted... Can we talk for a minute?
I glanced from side to side. Vaniv gave me a hugely exaggerated wink, and Sarah followed it with a hand sign that was either supportive or some kind of lewd gesture. I looked back at Cecily. Sure.
Okay, good.
She took another breath.
This is good. Can, we have the talk in private?
I stood up, glancing to the others. I'll be right back.
Not a problem, Corrin. We'll be here. Patrick grinned at me. Good to see you, Cecily.
She seemed to ease up just a little at Patrick's comment.
Thanks, Patrick. It's nice to see you too.
Cecily reached out for my hand. I stared at it for a moment, then processed how crowded it was and the necessity of her gesture before accepting it. Cecily led me through the crowd and then outside the room entirely. I followed, breathing heavily as we moved through the groups of people, and feeling a little less anxious once we managed to get outside of the ballroom. She seemed to have some idea of where she was leading me, at least. The term murder hallway somehow jumped into my mind. I was getting ambushed entirely too frequently. It was possible that it had done something bad to my nerves. She didn't take me far, fortunately. She took me through the halls and then back outside of the building through a side door into a garden with a hedge maze. There were fewer people here. Fortunately, none of them seemed to have glowing tattoos on their shoulders. I was very certain to check for that. Instead, They mostly seemed to be young couples determined to get lost in one of the corners of the hedge maze. I realized, of course, that we appeared to be doing the same.
Was that what this was? No, there was no way Cecily would be this forward about something like that. She couldn't have changed that much, not even after this many years.
By the time she pulled me into a dead end in the maze, I was reasonably confident that being killed here would be preferable to being in the crowded party, so I just sort of resigned myself to that possibility and started to consider what other options could explain her behavior. I wasn't properly prepared for what she said next, though. That seemed to be a theme in my life.
So, Corin,
she released my hand, turning to face me and leaning close.
Read any good books lately?
I stared at her blankly for a moment, processing.
You couldn't possibly mean,
she frowned.
I suppose I wasn't clear enough. I spent so long trying to figure out the right way to sound witty about that, too. Drat. I mean, have you had a chance to look at your messages from Tristan in the last few days?
My jaw opened, then closed, without any words escaping. That was more like Cecily, at least. Somehow, she'd always managed to catch me off guard. Cecily winced.
Was that too direct?
I shook my head.
No,
no. And that opening line was wonderful. I just didn't expect it. I didn't expect, well, you.
I'm sorry. I can go if I'm bothering you. I just, there's something important.
I took a deep breath. No, wait. My fault. I'm being terrible. I raised my hands in a conciliatory gesture. I don't want you to leave, Cecily. You're fine. I'm just processing. She nodded.
Okay. Right. Processing. I understand that.
So, I clasped my hands together. Before we continue, we're at a crowded party, and I don't know how you know about this at all, but we probably shouldn't be talking here.
That's why we're in this secluded location,
she gestured all around us.
Also, it's why I brought this.
She waggled her umbrella. I glanced upward, paying closer attention. There were just a few runes on the inside of it, cleverly concealed by the curvature of the cloth. Silence and anti-scrying, I realized.
Oh,
I blinked. That's actually rather brilliant. It's restricting noise from escaping.
Brilliant?
Cecily took a sharp breath, then stepped back. Had I said something wrong? I just kept talking, though. Like I do when I'm excited. I assume it's intended to keep anyone who isn't underneath the umbrella from hearing us?
It's actually a few feet wider than that, and it only dulls the sound and makes it harder to hear rather than silent. Silence is conspicuous, but just a murmur makes it sound like we're mumbling to each other. Most people won't notice a difference.
I bobbed my head in approval and then pointed at another rune. And that rune blocks scrying spells, I think. But I don't recognize the third one.
Oh, this?
She pointed at the third rune.
It's not in the current curriculum. I'm not surprised you haven't seen it. I'm a little surprised you even recognize the anti-scrying rune, to be honest. This one is a mild observation-blocking rune. It makes us less interesting to anyone who is within range, but not within the range of this other rune.
She pointed at another rune I hadn't seen.
Which lets the people who are within just a few feet of the umbrella interact with each other normally.
I clasped my hands together in realization. You're mimicking an effect similar to the mesmer attunement. Her eyes widened slightly.
I'm surprised you're familiar with that. It's somewhat obscure.
I chuckled. Believe me, I'm more than familiar with it at this point. But that's another story. I leaned forward slightly. And that brooch. That's an improved shield sigil, right? She nodded fervently.
Yes. Isn't that silver bird you're wearing a variant on that as well?
Sure is. I was wearing the silver phoenix sigil on the right breast of my tunic. It looked better there than on my pants, where I usually wore it. I tilted it upward so she could see it more easily. She leaned closer.
May I?
Oh, sure. I unpinned it. She unpinned her own brooch. We traded. I inspected the runes on her brooch. 4 enhancement runes. One for the shield itself, one for capacity, one for recharging. The fourth is connected to a series of knowledge runes. Interesting. Iterative hardening? Something that reinforces the shield in locations where it's recently been hit? Cecily let out a gleeful laugh.
You're the first person who understood that just by looking at it. Professor Vellum told me no one would ever...
I laughed. Vellum says a lot of things.
She certainly does.
Cecily ran her finger over my own sigil.
Fascinating. Building regeneration into a shielding device for an all-purpose defensive item. I can see that. And then this is, what, a defensive rune for the sigil itself, tied to some kind of storage rune? I'm afraid I'm not familiar with it.
The two runes together prevent anyone with different mana from my own from tampering with the enchantments. Just a precautionary measure. It'd probably never be necessary. Cecily shook her head.
No, I think it's quite intelligent. I'm not much of a fighter, but I've been experimenting with ideas for making items that are designed to remotely interact with other items. An enchantment like that would make it much more difficult, if not impossible.
That's very similar to what I was thinking about doing with my mana threats. But making items for it would probably be easier, if a little less flexible. I'd stop talking for a moment, just thinking, while I turned her shield sigil over in my hands.
You think that's a terrible idea, don't you?
Cecily asked.
Hmm?
I shook my head, remembering what I'd been talking with her about. Oh, no. It was just extremely similar to one of my own ideas. Also, you reminded me about a time I detonated someone's shield sigil.
Detonated? Wouldn't that be terribly dangerous?
That was kind of the point, I admitted, chagrined. But that's a long story. I suppose you may know bits of it if you know about the book.
Oh, right. The book. Tristan, yes. I need to give you a message. Very important.
I nodded at her. What's the message?
Well, it's to make sure you listen to the last thing he sent to you.
I considered that. I don't think I've seen that message yet. I'll take a look later.
You should really take a look soon. Maybe right now?
She sounded hopeful. I glanced from side to side. There was no one else in this part of the maze, just Cecily Lambert and me. How many times had we been alone like this when we'd been young, chatting and laughing about other books? I reached into the bag at my side, then hesitated. First, let's trade these back before we forget. I handed her the brooch.
Oh, right, of course.
She returned my sigil.
I hope I didn't offend.
You're fine, Cecily. But before I confirm if I have the book with me, I need to know how you know about it in the first place. How involved are you in all this? Cecily winced.
Not very.
She glanced from side to side, much like I had moments before.
I'm sorry. I don't know much about all this. I just heard recently that your brother was alive, and I was so glad. I know how much he meant to Unica. And to you, of course.
I nodded. Did he approach you somehow? In the spire?
Him? No, I haven't seen Tristan. Have you?
I shook my head. Not in person.
I think Unica has.
Cecily shook her head.
Maybe. She won't tell me much. She just told me that I needed to get you to read the book and to heed his warning.
Warning? Cecily gave me a sad look.
Can we... just... leave the party? Then you can read the book and we can just catch up on all this. Come home with me?
I shook my head. I need to know more about what's going on before I can make any decisions about that.
Then...
she glanced downward toward my bag. It occurred to me that there was a possibility, however slight, that this was some sort of attempt by an outside party to determine if I really had the book. Or perhaps even to steal it. But with what Cecily had demonstrated she already knew, and Unica, Cecily's sister, she'd been Tristan's fiancée before he disappeared. We talked as children about marrying the two sisters together. It was the same story that Tristan had sent to me to verify who he was. Had that been a hint that he'd been talking to Unica? I made a decision on instinct. It was a careless one, far from my usual style. I chose to trust someone. I reached into my bag and flipped open the lid of the Jaden box. Retrieve Trials of Judgment. The book appeared. Cecily stared.
Wow. What is that? I've seen storage items, but something that can recall something specific? Is it linked to some kind of...
That's a discussion for another time, Cecily. Sorry. Let me take a look at this. Cecily nodded.
Can I see?
I paused, then shrugged. You know what? If I'm in halfway, might as well go the rest. Yeah, come closer. She took a couple steps closer, then turned so she could read with me. I flipped the book open, all the way to the last thing I'd sent to Tristan, then passed it. I found a new reply.
Corin, do not under any circumstances attend the winter ball. If for some reason you find yourself at the ball, leave as soon as possible without making a scene. Certain matters have gotten beyond my control. I would advise you to head to Delenos as quickly as possible. There's someone you need to talk to there. By now I suspect you know who I mean. I'll say this one last time. Do not attend the winter ball. You will be in extreme danger if you are present. Do not attempt to warn others. You cannot stop what is coming. Neither could I. I am sorry. Tristan Cadence.
I glanced at Cecily. She looked up from the page, frowning.
Well, that's foreboding.
I nodded slowly. No one told you what it was going to say?
No. Unica just told me to find you and give you that message. She...
Cecily frowned.
Implied that I should leave right afterward.
I closed the book and set it inside the box. Store Trials of Judgment. The book vanished.
That's amazing. Can I see...
I shook my head. Not right this minute. Maybe later. Cecily frowned.
I suppose you're right. After reading that, we really should be leaving.
I raised a hand to my chin. He was tremendously vague about what was going on. Do you have any idea about why he would be so concerned?
No. Unica was clear that they had enemies, though. She said someone very dangerous was looking for Tristan, but she wouldn't tell me why.
I might be able to share something about that later. A loud voice interrupted us, sounding like it was coming from everywhere at once.
All guests, please proceed to the main ballroom. The Chancellor's speech is about to begin.
I glanced at Cecily. If there's going to be something happening, that sounds like it could be a good time. She reached out and grabbed my hand.
We should leave, Corin. Your brother's note was abundantly clear. It's not safe to stay.
I nodded. You're right, but it wasn't clear on if it was just dangerous for me, or if it's something that could hurt everyone else.
Corin, you cannot stop what's coming,
Cecily quoted from the book. I shrugged a shoulder. He's been wrong before. I started to head back toward the main ballroom, still holding Cecily's hand. She followed.
This is a mistake, Corin. We should be leaving.
At least let me warn Sarah and Patrick. They can leave with us. We don't have any indication of what this threat is. If it's an individual that may be looking to attack me, I'm already here, and having numbers with us may help. Cecily stopped walking, pulling her hand free from mine.
You're going to be stubborn about this, aren't you?
I turned my head toward her.
Yep.
She didn't look like she was reaching for a weapon or anything, at least. She just looked sad. Cecily shook her head.
Fine. I'm going with you to warn the others. But we're leaving after that, even if it's as a group.
A second announcement went out, mirroring the first. The speech would be happening in a few moments. That gave me just a precious few moments to consider. Okay. We'll get our friends, then leave. Deal. Cecily's expression hardened to one of resolve.
Good.
She took my hand again, and together, we made our way back to the ballroom. I felt like someone was watching us as we walked back in, but as soon as my mind noted it, the thought seemed to fade away. It wasn't important. We headed toward the table with Sarah and the others. The Chancellor was standing in the center of the room, a handful of officials and a few professors standing with her. Behind us, guards closed the doors to the room. Cecily's hand tightened around mine. We continued to the table, sitting down just as the Chancellor began her speech.
Today I'm proud to greet the graduating class of 412.
Students cheered while the faculty clapped politely.
I'd also like to congratulate all of our students who just finished their first year. When we first began this year, I told you...
The Chancellor began. I ignored her, leaning toward Sarah to whisper.
We need to leave as soon as this speech is over.
Sarah blinked at me.
What? Why?
Message indicated that we are in significant danger.
Like, right now? What sort of danger?
Don't know, but it sounded bad. Like, we can't deal with it bad. We need to get the others and go.
Someone at a table nearby told us to be quiet. We ignored them.
Okay, sure. I'll tell Marissa.
She leaned over to whisper to Marissa.
You should all be proud to have conquered your first year, but the greater challenges await.
The Chancellor continued. I was next to Patrick, so I relayed the message to him.
What? Really? It was just getting good. And I haven't, had a chance to dance with anyone yet.
Patrick,
I narrowed my eyes, trying to look as serious as possible.
We are leaving.
He nodded.
Got it. At least you finally got to see Cecily, eh?
I didn't have a response to that, so I just quieted to listen to the end of the speech.
For everyone here that supported our graduating class, parents, professors, and our sponsors, I'd like to give you our sincerest thanks. You've helped ensure that our graduates will be the shield that protects this country for generations to come.
It's funny that you talk about protecting your country,
came a voice from the student section,
when you stand with the very people who sold it out.
The voice was loud enough that I could hear it clearly, likely amplified by magic like the Chancellor's own speech. I didn't see the speaker until she stepped out from the tables and onto the floor in the center of the room, facing the Chancellor. The woman with long purple hair. I had a very bad feeling about where this was going.
Change of plans. Leaving immediately. Everyone grab onto me.
I said it just loud enough that the people at my table could hear it. And apparently the table behind us, because they complained about the noise again. I stuck my hand toward the center of the table. Cecily grabbed my hand immediately. The others leaned forward a moment later, including Vaniv. The Chancellor turned toward the woman.
Who are you, and what are you talking about, young lady?
Young?
The purple-haired woman laughed.
That's a faulty assumption, but nowhere near as large of a mistake as the ones that led you to this day. You should ask the counselors next to you about the deal that they just made.
An older woman, the owner of the estate, Archduchess Lannoy, I realized, stepped forward next to Chancellor Wallace.
You will be silent, young lady. How dare you speak to us this way? The Chancellor was in the middle of a...
The purple-haired woman waved a hand. Archduchess Lannoy collapsed unceremoniously to the floor. At the distance, I couldn't see what had happened. I just heard the screams. I didn't wait a moment longer.
Return!
The circlet on my head flashed. Nothing else happened.
Anti-teleport runes,
Cecily said, releasing her grip.
They're all over the walls.
Resh, I saw those earlier. And so did the purple-haired woman.
What have you done?
A man's voice demanded. I couldn't see him over the crowd of people that were starting to stand up. My friends let go of me, turning to move. Sarah began to mutter the words of a spell. There was a crash, followed by a burst of light, then more screaming.
Now,
came the purple-haired woman's voice again.
You will all sit still and be silent.
I felt the weight of her words slam down on my mind like a hammer. I shuddered. Grips on my arm tightened. All around me, hundreds of panicked students were sitting down. Once everyone was seated, it was easier to see what had happened. The purple-haired woman was standing in the center of the room. She was the only one still standing in that area. Most of the others, including Chancellor Wallace, were lying flat on the ground. I couldn't see clearly, but they looked to be covered with burns. Counselor Lannoy was sitting rather than lying on the floor, and he was visibly trembling with effort. I remembered that he had been powerful. He was one of the people who had confronted Karis along with my mother. But as much as he was clearly struggling, he failed to force himself to stand. There were a handful of others who were still seated on the central stage rather than lying prone. With a moment of shock, I realized that one of them was Lord Taft. I needed to move. I started to convert my mana into mental mana, cycling it to try to rid my body of the spell's effect. but this was powerful mind magic. It was probably a hair weaker than what Saffron had hit me with, but it wasn't just working on one person. It had hit everyone in the room. Thousands of people. And even slightly weaker than Saffron's magic was still far stronger than anything I could manage. I'd stored the Ring of Derek Controlling in the Jaden box. If I could have reached it, I might have been able to use it to free myself. Unfortunately, the purple-haired woman's command was stricter than what Saffron had used, and it prevented me from moving at all. I couldn't reach for the box or speak to retrieve items. The purple-haired woman walked over to the podium where Chancellor Wallace had once stood, kicked Chancellor Wallace's body off the stage, and leaned forward.
"That's better,"
she grinned brightly. It was hard to tell from a distance, but it looked almost like she had fangs.
"I'd like to welcome the final graduating class of Lorien Heights University."
She clapped her hands together.
"Isn't that exciting? To be one of the very last," she sighed dramatically. "I suppose it would be more exciting if you had a few minutes left to celebrate. But alas, that's not to be."
One of the people on the stage, an older man in a military uniform, managed to struggle to his feet.
"You will cease this at once."
The purple-haired woman turned.
"My, that was quick. You're a strong one for a human. Be a wise man as well, and sit down, will you?"
The older man took a step forward.
"You will not intimidate me, young lady. I've faced worse."
"I sincerely doubt that."
The woman waved a hand again. The older man dropped to his knees, clutching his throat. The purple-haired woman turned back to the podium.
"Now where was I? Ah, yes. I'd like you all to understand that this is not your fault. Referring to the students, that is. This is their fault."
She pointed a hand backward, toward the people struggling on the stage.
"For compromising everything this nation once stood for."
I glanced toward the guest section. There were a handful of people who looked like they were beginning to break free from the spell and whisper to one another, but they weren't standing. They probably didn't want to draw this woman's attention.
"You see," the woman continued, "I don't get out much. Out of the spire, that is. And when I do, it's usually because someone did something terribly wrong. A few noblemen who need to be taught a lesson in Edria. A handful of conspirators working to research forbidden magic. The nation of Lavia preparing to invade a spire, that sort of thing."
She smiled again.
"You see, when I'm sent out here, it means that someone has made a mistake of such a magnitude that no one is going to forget it for generations. And in this case, that mistake was selling Velia out to the tyrant in gold."
I heard a few gasps from the crowd. Apparently the inability to speak hadn't sealed off our ability to vocalize entirely. Maybe I would have tried to use that if I wasn't too terrified.
"Move, damn you."
Her command was even worse than what Saffron had used. "Sit still" prevented me from moving at all. Otherwise, I would have tried to move my hand to my forehead to transfer my mana.
"Now, not everyone here can be equally blamed, of course," the woman continued. "When Tengen disappeared, your council was quick to seek another benefactor. Perhaps it was obvious that they would turn toward the most powerful option they could think of."
The purple-haired woman sighed.
"Frankly, I'm very disappointed with all of you."
She turned around, pointed a hand at the people on the stage. Counselor Lannoy managed to struggle to his feet.
"It is not what you say."
"Oh? Did you have something to say in your defense, Counselor? I'd love to hear it."
"Goddess abandoned us long ago."
"Oh? What makes you say that?"
Lannoy seemed genuinely confused.
"Salisa has not appeared in centuries."
The purple-haired woman sighed, shaking her head.
"Are the gifts that she has given to you insufficient? Spires filled with magic, and her own children to watch over you?"
There was a hint of spite as she added,
"Not all of us are so fortunate as to be the favorite children."
"You call us fortunate?"
Lannoy's voice was much clearer now.
"You were born with greater power than any human can possibly achieve, Ms. Tsuchi."
I shivered, as I heard the name.
No, no, no. Power, yes, I certainly have that,
Mizuchi laughed. But you were the ones given freedom, and you've squandered it. Turned away from your benefactor at your first opportunity.
Lanoi tilted his head downward. You can have your freedom as well, Mizuchi. Let us discuss.
There will be no further discussion. Mizuchi waved a hand downward, and a blast of kinetic energy followed her movement, smashing Lanoi into the ground. As Lanoi struggled to push himself back to his feet, an aura of lightning began to crackle around Mizuchi. She took a step closer to the counselor.
Your words are empty. Your excuses are insufficient. You are guilty of heresy and treason. I will be your executioner.
Lanoi traced a hand through the air. A dozen spheres of mana appeared around him, rotating in a circular pattern. Mizuchi tilted her head to the side.
Really? You're going to try to fight me?
You're not invincible.
Lanoi snapped his fingers. The spheres of mana each fired a series of blasts of white light, enveloping Mizuchi entirely. When my vision cleared, Mizuchi stood in the same spot, completely unscathed.
Invincible? Not technically, I suppose. But I'm close enough that there's no practical difference.
Lanoi unleashed another series of blasts with similar results, but that seemed to draw Mizuchi's attention. That allowed three people in the guest section to stand up and launch attacks of their own from a different angle. A teacher called on a rain of ice from above, sending shards of jagged frost in Mizuchi's direction. A guardian jumped forward, blade drawn. A woman stood and raised a longbow, firing an arrow that glowed with white light. Mizuchi snatched the arrow out of the air, ignored the shards of ice, and spun as the swordsman arrived. When her fist impacted his chest, the room shook like thunder. The guardian's entire chest caved on the impact, and his limp body flew a dozen feet before landing at the foot of a table. Someone managed to scream. The aura of lightning around Mizuchi continued to grow.
How are you outside of your spire? Lanoi demanded. Who sent you? Tenjin is gone. Is Katashi so vengeful that he...
Mizuchi took another step toward the counselor.
You needn't know the details. You wouldn't live long enough to act on anything you learned.
I had a few ideas, but none of that really mattered at the moment. My focus was on getting enough of my will back to speak. If I could speak, I could activate my necklace and send messages to Derek and Karis. Alora was already here somewhere, but I knew she wasn't at her best. She was still recovering from her mana scars. Maybe, just maybe, the three of them would stand a chance. I couldn't imagine anyone else who did. Lanoi hurled another attack, a more concentrated beam of light. Mizuchi sidestepped that one. Perhaps it might have been powerful enough to harm her if it had connected, but she seemed to avoid it without effort. The counselor growled, sounding angrier as Mizuchi drew closer.
You cannot be here without the authority of...
Enough! Mizuchi raised a hand. I might allow a few survivors to spread the word about what happened here, but you won't be one of them, counselor.
Mizuchi vanished, moving too fast for me to perceive. When she reappeared, her arm was sticking through the center of Counselor Lanoi's chest. He slumped forward, unmoving. Mizuchi extracted her blood-stained arm, shaking her head. I thought I saw a hint of emotion cross her face. Disappointment, perhaps.
Traitor. That death was cleaner than you deserved.
Mizuchi stared down at the body for just another moment, then raised her head and concentrated. The lightning around her lashed out, then forked toward the remaining people on the stage.
I managed a moment of worry for Lord Teft, still struggling to stand.
The lightning never struck. It arced upward. We'd all been focusing too hard on the few people who could stand. No one noticed the one person who was floating above the entire area, now holding a ball of swirling lightning in her hand.
Hello, Mizuchi.
Professor Meltlake landed on the opposite side of the stage, tossing the ball of lightning into the air. It dispersed a moment later. Mizuchi tilted her head downward.
At last, she grinned, displaying teeth. A hero arrives.
She clapped her hands together, a shockwave blasting outward in all directions. The few others on the stage who had managed to stand flew backward, smashing against the ground.